right, so we started the book in verse 2 with, count it all joy when you fall into manifold trials. Now, trials, of course, are those terrible events that occur in life that often cause us to reflect because something bad has happened, financial setbacks, bereavements, things along that line. And so when those things come, there is a silver lining. There's always a silver lining. Remember that Christians are strangers and pilgrims. We don't look at things the way that people in this life look at them. In 2 Corinthians chapter 4, the things that are seen are what?
Temporary.
And the things that are not seen are eternal. And so as Abraham and those who lived before Abraham, they all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them and greeted them and confessing that they were what?
Strangers and pilgrims.
So the things that other people are looking at, most people want to have a life that is filled with joy and peace and comfort and no problems. And of course, we all want that. But when problems come, is there something the Christian can get from them that other people won't? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that's what James is talking about here. So when it comes to those types of trials, tests that come along so that we can prove to God, for example, Job, what was Job going to prove by remaining faithful to God under all those trials?
That he loved God.
Okay, that he was sincere, that he was genuine. There's a lot of fair weather friends in the world. A lot of people who enjoy being around us while everything is good and while we have money and while we can pull our own weight. What happens to a lot of them when we fall into trouble and we can't pull our weight anymore? Yeah, they're not always there. Now, the ones who stay for that, what do you think about that? See, those are sincere, genuine friends. And that's what God wants. God, there's so many people that want God to be their friend. But when things get rough, how many people really want to be God's friend? I'm going to, like Job said to his wife, you speak as a foolish woman, because she said, curse God and die. And what does he say? We've accepted good from God. Yeah, can't we handle the evil too? Can't we remain faithful during evil? And so that's the first section here. Then, starting in verse 13, let no one say when he is tempted, I'm tempted by God. Now, this is a totally different use of the term. The word trial means something you fall into. What about a temptation? Where do temptations come from? Okay, first of all, they don't come from God. And secondly, now, and we'll start in verse 14, each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. And then when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death. Do not be deceived, my beloved brethren. So God is wanting us to get to heaven. Where did sin come from? God creates sin? Is it something that God had in his arsenal back before he created the heavens and the earth? No. Sin was never part of God's plan, nor was it ever part of God's gift. We'll see here in a moment in verse 17 what did come from God in verse 17. All right, so every good thing that's in your life, every blessing, every wonderful emotion, every happy situation that arises, that all came from God, and that's what God wanted life to be like. Well, where did these other things come from? Even these trials, do these trials originate in God? In Genesis 1, when God saw all that he had made, what did he see?
Very good.
It was very good. Well, where did death come from then? Where did bereavement come from then? Where did all these problems come from? Well, they came from the curse. They came as a result. Now, is there a big difference between consequences and gifts? Is there a difference between the consequences of your own actions and the gifts that you get from people? Huge difference. All the problems in our life are a result of consequences. The difference between what God says in Genesis 1 where he sees all that he had made and it's very good. Now what does Ecclesiastes say? Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. So something happened. Well, where did the vanity come from? God gave it to us? No. No, it was a consequence. Consequence of our actions. We bring a lot of problems down on ourselves. And then we want to turn around and say, this is all God's fault. And it just won't wash. It just won't work. Because as we look back on the history of the creation, we see it all started with man. It didn't start with God. And God was very clear. Now, well, yeah, let's at least address that. Why would God put the tree of the knowledge of good and evil in the garden then? What does he want to find out?
Adam and Eve are sincere.
What's that? Okay, exactly. Can you love if you can't reject? If there's no opportunity to reject. Is that real love? You know, I've illustrated this so many times. I'm so lonely, so I go buy a tape recorder. Alan, you are the most wonderful man in the world. I love you more than anyone. You are the greatest. There's no human being as good as you are. And I play that back to myself, and what does it do? Oh, man. Well, what is that? It doesn't mean anything. Why not? Because it's just a tape recorder that doesn't have a choice but to say what I programmed it to say. But when my wife says it, does she have to say it? Well, it depends, doesn't it? No. Yeah, she doesn't have to say it. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that. It just popped into my head. She has a choice. We have a choice. So where did sin come from? Sin came when Satan said to Eve, here's this tree. God told you can't eat it. And why did he tell you can't eat it? Because he wants you to keep something from you. He's keeping something from you. He knows that you won't die, first of all. He's lying about that. And secondly, he knows if you eat it, you're going to become as smart as he is, and he doesn't want that. So then what's Eve start doing? Where's our friendly relationship with God now? Who's the one that gave her everything she has?
God.
What'd Satan give her? What'd the serpent give her? Nothing. Yeah, right, except doubt. And but now, you know, here we are years later, and we're now looking at all of this, and we have to make decisions. We have to make decisions about whether God is worthy to be served or not. And a lot of people have serious questions about serving God because of all the problems in the world. And so what James is trying to do here, first of all, he's trying to get us to reevaluate all the bad things that are in the world, like these terrible things, because actually they're good for us. Because we're in a preparation phase for the life to come. And then secondly now, the most sinister thing in the world is sin and death. And of course, what leads to sin? What has to happen before any sin is committed? Temptation. So we're going to start there. Let no one say when he is tempted, I'm tempted by God, for God cannot be tempted with evil, and he doesn't tempt anyone himself. Okay, so that we talked about last week. So now we come to verse 14. Each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own lusts and enticed. Now, I put this on the first page, even though we covered it last week, just so that we would have it and so that we could talk a little bit about it. But I really want to get down to the terms at the bottom here. There's two words. One's right in the middle, and this is where we finished up last week. Temptation forms the very instant that each one is drawn away. Now, the Greek word drawn away here means to lure forth. So, I go fishing, and I get a lure, or I get a bait, and what's my goal? That fish is over here. Where do I want him?
You want him to come to you.
I can't get him to bite that hook, can I? So what do I have to do?
Draw him in.
To lure him forth. So I get this shiny lure, or I get this power bait, or I get these salmon eggs, or I get whatever it is that I think will lure them forth. And if I can get them to come, now what can I do? Now I might be able to catch them. Not everyone catches them, but at least if you can get them to come to look. And that's what this first term is, to lure forth, to draw forth. Now, the next one, enticed, at the very bottom there, you see, comes from the Greek word to means, which means to catch with bait. So first we want to get them out. We want to get them out looking. And then after we get them looking, what do we want?
Them to grab it.
You want them to grab it. Okay? You ever watch, if you're reeling it in, this beautiful big fish is following it all the way in. But what does it never do?
Never takes it.
And of course, that's the nice way. This is very different. This is more insidious. When the serpent was giving Eve that information, what does Jesus tell us his hope was in John 8:44? He was a liar and
a murderer.
So what was he hoping for? He used that tree to kill her. He used that tree to kill Adam and Eve and to destroy God's beautiful creation. This was, you know, and we'll never know, I guess, until the judgment day, whether this was the moment Satan became evil or whether he was already evil when he did this. And of course, there's opinions abound. It doesn't really make much difference to us. But the attempt to tempt didn't come from God. It came from Satan. And so how does God tell us to look at Satan? He's a roaring lion. He's a terrible serpent with a poison of asps under his lips. He is an incredibly dangerous enemy, a liar with great power and great ability. And not only that, but we learn in Revelation chapter 12 that the devil has what? When he goes to war with Michael and his archangels, what does he have?
Angels.
He has angels. Or, as we learn in Ephesians chapter 6, a spiritual host of wickedness. So we're up against some pretty strong enemies, and we have a very strong ally, but the enemies try to get us to do what to the ally, just like the serpent did to Eve? What do they want us to do? Doubt God. If you doubt the only one who can help you, what's going to happen? See, then you're, and this is why this passage is so critical to all of us, because as he's going to tell us in verses 16 and 17, every good gift and every perfect gift comes from where? So if it's good, where did it come from? If it's bad, it didn't come from God. Either came from me. It came as a consequence. Let's put it like that. It came as a consequence. Satan can't actually do anything, because all he can do is tempt. But when he tempts, what's the consequence so often? Terrible, terrible things in our lives, in the lives of other people. All right, so what we see here in verse 14, is that temptation is created with a desire, an enticement, and a bait. Okay, and we've discussed this so many times now. Every one of us is baited differently. Just like if you're going to fish for bass, or if you're going to fish for salmon, use the same bait. No, you have to get the bait that the fish are interested in. And so we read the lust of the flesh in Ephesians chapter 5, and we talk about murder, and we talk about adultery, and we talk about stealing and lying, and are we tempted by all those things? Somebody puts lying on a hook and runs it through the building. How many of us are going to run after it? But somebody puts a naked woman on a hook. How many people are going to run after her? Well, that's how Satan works. You say, well, that doesn't happen. Well, think about Potiphar's wife. What was she doing?
Alluring.
She was trying to allure and trying to tempt and trying to create desire. And fortunately, Joseph was not interested. But every one of us is tempted. And I remember last week we talked about this. What do they say about snowflakes? There's no two that are... And I think temptations are like that. And I think our reasons for giving into sin are like that. Everybody does similar things, but they often do them for entirely different reasons. And that's why God says, don't judge anything before the time. You're not going to know why they do it, because everybody's tempted a little differently. You're just going to be able to see that they did it. So each one is tempted when he's drawn away by his own desires and enticed. Then, when the desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. All right, now let's turn to the top of page 2. We want to talk a little bit about this term. This is a very unusual term. We read a lot of thens in the scripture, but usually they're just a logical connection between two things, if and then. But this one is different. This is an adverb of time, right at the top of page 2. It means, it's talking about, if you look at the very end of the first page, or the first line, it says, a sequence, to mark a sequence depending either on temporal succession or on the nature of things enumerated. So this is a point, a logical point, or a temporal or time point where something changes into something else. We had a temptation. The temptation has been as a result of a desire, but as the desire, the enticement, creates the temptation, then what? Okay, well, here's what's next. All right, so then something else occurs. And what happens next is that desire conceives. Now, when we think about conception, what are we talking about?
Birth.
Okay. Well, no. Conception and birth are separated a little bit. We're going to deal with the birth later. What about the conception?
Before birth.
Okay, before. And Rob's not, I'm not saying you're wrong, Rob. I'm just saying we're dealing with a set of time sequences, and we have to look at each one individually. First, we have the pre-conception, which is when, and this is why with Jesus, when Jesus was tempted in all points like with we, as we, was sin ever conceived? No. So does sin have to be conceived when there's temptation? No. And that's where we have this incredibly fine line, and usually we can't see where it is. I feel the temptation. Generally, when I feel a temptation, I repent of it. Why?
Keep yourself clean.
Well, because I don't know what. Where does the temptation turn to sin? At what point does temptation turn to sin? Because what did Jesus say in Matthew 5 about anger and sexual lust? If you look at a woman
to lust.
Well, wait a minute, though. But that's just the temptation phase, right? No. What does he say? You're guilty of adultery if you lust. So the temptation for man, it's really tough. I've never seen someone. I don't know if you ever think like this. Well, I don't have to repent because I was only tempted. I didn't sin. How do you know? And it's so dangerous, and the sequence here is so rapid. It moves from desire and enticement to temptation to sin to death. Bang, 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 bang. And I make a point in the notes, we probably won't spend much time on it, but we don't have the ability to see when the one changes to the other. In other words, at what point in Eve desiring that tree? Because we know even before she reached out for it, what had happened. Because what does Jesus say in Matthew 5? If you're angry with your brother, you're guilty of murder. If you lust after a woman, you're guilty of adultery. The desire conceives and creates temptation, and temptation creates sin. So desire has conceived and gives birth to sin. So first we have a conception, then we have a birth. And so this is the process. And then, he says, when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death. Now, I've always struggled with this concept, and I want you to think about this a little bit, because there's actually two different ways to translate this word give birth, and our translations do it. Look at toward the bottom, the middle, but toward the bottom, where it says, when sin is accomplished, New American Standard Version. When sin is finished, King James Version. When sin is full grown, fully grown, or fully matured, these other translations. Now, let me read this little sentence or this little paragraph right underneath that. I've always struggled with the translations that translate this term with the idea of sin growing from infancy to maturity. The problem is that there is no time, even in its infancy, that sin does not bring death. The idea that sin can be an infant without bringing death and that death only comes after it is grown up is foreign to the Scriptures. Jesus revealed this truth in his Sermon on the Mount. He really doesn't give us any room for progression. The lust, even in the heart, has already brought forth sin and death. So let me read the next paragraph after those two verses. The Greek term is not used in the Scriptures of growing to maturity, but of bringing something quite to an end. That's the definition that you see right at the bottom there. To bring quite to an end, to complete. So what is that moment between conception and full accomplishment where it moves from temptation to sin? Now, I don't think you can put your finger on that. Go ahead, Virgil.
In the book of Proverbs, we're told that if a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. I can't see where we could have conception without the thought.
Okay.
Because anytime we have conception, whether it's in the material realm of bringing forth life, there's always something that precedes the conception.
Right.
The conception takes place because of what we've done. And then from there, it matures. Then maybe that's where some people get the idea of the maturity of it. I don't know about it.
Okay, Brian?
Yeah, and so, I mean, to me, there's some sins like take anger. The Bible says be angry and sin not. But we can transition from, you know, anger that's not sinful to anger that's sinful pretty quickly, right?
Right.
So it just depends on the type of sin, right, sometimes.
Well, sometimes, you know, you speak rudely, and then the person comes to you later and says, well, I was angry, but I didn't sin. Well, yeah, you did sin. Well, no, I didn't sin. Well, let's not argue about it, all right? The fact is, yeah, you can be angry and not sin, but how quick does it change?
We don't know
exactly. See, and that's the problem. That's why when we talk about temptation in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, all temptation is common to man, but what is God? He's faithful. And what's he give?
Escape.
A way of escape. In other words, get it out of there as quick as you can. Joseph got out, didn't stay. And that's what we have to do, because the death that is described here is not... Remember what... Well, I think the best way to illustrate this is to go back to the first time. Adam and Eve were alive, and they were told, in the day you eat of it, you will die. So is this physical death? Did they die physically the day they ate of it? No, Adam lived another 900 and some odd years. So what physical death? This is a spiritual death. In the day you eat of it, you will die. Now, what did Paul say? I was alive apart from the law. Commandment came. Sin came alive. There's that process from conception to birth to accomplished, and I died. So, you know, if you want to think, well, sin, if you let sin go long enough, you're going to die physically. No, that won't fit the context here. That's not what this is talking about. Rob?
Can you explain again so I understand what you're saying? When every man is tempted, is that sin?
Well, Jesus was tempted at all points without, as we are, without sin. Jesus could do that. You and I are in a much more fragile situation, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
You say, well, I was tempted, but I didn't sin. And then you go before God, and God says, well, yeah, you did. So what's safer? Because you can't see the line. How do you know when you've crossed the line? You're being enticed. And Jesus says, if you look at a woman to lust, you've committed adultery. You don't have to go any further. You don't have to talk to her. You don't have to move any way at all. All you have to do is look to lust. Well, most people call that a temptation, right? So where's the line? And since we don't know where the line is, what do?
It's safe. You see it.
Rob, you're looking skeptical or confused.
I'm not. I don't know if I can say that every temptation is... It could lead to that very quickly. I'm not saying that.
How would you know, though? If it was a temptation.
I thought the individual, you know, I was tempted. Okay, let me just give you an example. an alcoholic. He may have been tempted daily, I guess, to be an alcoholic, but he didn't go and get the alcohol. Maybe he's still fighting that desire, but he didn't overcome the temptation of drinking. That, I guess that's... But would you say that he even thought about drinking he's wrong? I don't know. I'm not trying
to... Well, that's where the problem is. Is anger and adultery the only two? What about covetousness? If I covet alcohol, what does that create? See, all I'm saying is, okay, you know, each one of you individually, if you want to make those lines and draw those lines, that's fine. But as a teacher and as a preacher, I'm going to tell you, this is the only safe thing. When you feel a temptation, you need to think about whether or not it crossed the line of sin. And if there's any doubt at all in your mind, what should you do?
Oh, yeah, no, I understand.
So, see, that's all I'm saying. Now, I'm not saying, I mean, could Jesus be tempted in all points like as we without sin? Yeah. So can it be done?
Yes.
Well, of course it can. But where's that line? And that's all I'm saying is, since we don't know where the line is. Jack?
You know, Virgil mentioned a minute ago that conception takes place because something happened. Well, in verse 14, it says that we're drawn away by our own lusts. Well, that tells me that those lusts have grown in our mind based on things that we have allowed in, based on things that we find ourselves taking an interest in. So those lusts are there, and lust itself is a sin. So I'm thinking that I'm saying the same thing you are, that when it gets to that point that you have the lust to have the temptation, yeah, you've already sinned.
It's very dangerous. That's. I guess we could say that, right? We can all agree that temptation is very dangerous, and that when you know what tempts you, you need to be very careful, because you remember what Paul said in Romans 14: make no provisions to the lust of the flesh to fulfill. What does it mean to make provisions for? It means having that TV in my house with HBO, so that if I get a desire in the middle of the night, what can I do? I can fulfill it. Oh, I didn't mean to do that. Well, then get rid of HBO. Cut it off. Then you don't have to worry about it. You haven't made any provisions for it. I'm an alcoholic. I'm just going to keep one bottle in the cabinet. Well, why do you want that bottle? Well, I just want to prove to myself that I won't drink it. Well, that's kind of making a provision. Don't do that. So it's just, as I say, we're looking at, I think, some very deep information here. And I'm just trying to help draw it out for all of us to look at it, because... we all know that sin starts before the act. Every sin starts before the act. It starts when the will of the mind has made the decision. Whether you ever get to fulfill it or not, does that matter? See, I don't think it matters, because I think that's Jesus' point. I don't think Jesus was just saying anger and lust are the only ones, because God says in the law, you shall not covet what? Neighbor's wife, servant, house, or anything that is your neighbor's. So at what point does my keeping up with the Joneses become covetousness? At what point does ambition turn to covetousness? See, this is the problem in our upward mobility society, is that it's very blurred for us. We really can't tell when wanting a better job, wanting a new TV, wanting a better refrigerator, wanting a better car is upward mobility or covetousness. Jesus said, avoid every form of covetousness, because no matter how much you have, a man's life does not consist in his possessions. Where's that hand? Oh, Charles?
Yeah, you know, you think about those men like David, like Solomon, was it Queen Esther, you know, all of these things right here. These men, in order for them to have all of those concubines or whatever, you know, they would have had to have that type of lust or whatever for them to have all those women that was part of what they were about, you know. And they see these things, you know, and they see them, and it was like, you know, I mean, I want this one, I want that one, or whatever, you know. And I'm just thinking about, you know, how it must have been, you know, comparing what you're saying, you know, with that type situation right there.
Yeah, and of course, everybody's different. There are people today who don't have any concubines at all that are worse off than Solomon as far as lusts are concerned. And so it's just a struggle. And as I say, the purpose here is not really to get into this, and we've kind of gone a lot deeper. The whole purpose of this section is to show that temptation is a consequence. It's not something God sends. It's a consequence of lusts and enticements. And so every temptation is only created by lust and enticement. And once that temptation is there, the transition from lust, temptation, to sin is only stated as the desire is conceived. And conception is an extremely difficult point on the transition from I'm not even thinking about this thing. Now I see this enticement. I start thinking about this thing. I start getting a little bit interested in this thing. And then I start getting more interested in this thing. And at some point I transition to what? Conception. And once conception has occurred, then it's going to be fully accomplished. Even if I don't, because Jesus said, if you look to lust, has it already been fully accomplished?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're already guilty. Rob?
Just one more thing. I guess 1 Corinthians 10:13 would help explain how that God is faithful and will not suffer to be tempted above that you're able, but with the temptation. So he can even help us not be tempted.
Well, that's in the Sermon on the Mount. What did Jesus say? We should pray every day. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. Okay, you can scratch your eye. That's okay. I thought you were going to go a little higher there. All right. Okay, so now verse 16, do not be deceived, my beloved brethren. Now, they put a paragraph here because they're not sure whether it should go back or forward, and it fits either way. Don't be deceived that all your temptations come from you. Or don't be deceived that every good gift and every perfect gift is coming down from above. So, but the idea here is don't allow... Well, how did he put it in Proverbs 3:5? Trust in the Lord with all your heart and don't lean on your understanding. This is the truth. If it doesn't feel right, don't be deceived. Nothing evil in this world came from God. None of the trials in this world came from God. None of the problems in this world came from God. God gave us a perfect earth, warning us, if you sin, you're going to break it. What do? We sinned, we broke it. And now, God is just trying to help us pick up the pieces. And that's why all these things are here. All of these things, even all the terrible consequences. You know, there's two kinds of discipline. There's the discipline where you're angry and you want to punish, and there's the discipline that what? You're trying to help the person who did something wrong. And what about God? God angry and punishing? No, not yet. Now, after the judgment day, what do we see? I mean, if you want to see serious punishment, then read 2 Thessalonians 1, where it talks about the wrath of God that is being poured out. And of course, that's a different situation. We're not there at all. All of the situations on this earth, they're for our good always. Everything that any bad thing that happens is for our good always. God never wants to harm anyone. Because God is what?
Love.
God is love. So don't be deceived, my beloved brethren. Don't, you know, these books that are coming out, why do bad things happen to good people? And suddenly, who are we blaming it all on? God made this terrible world, and why would God do such a terrible thing to this terrible world when there's so many good people? Well, first of all, how many good people are there in this world? There are none righteous, no, not one. So let's clarify that. There are only sinful people who need help getting to heaven. And need help being weaned away from this world. If we think this world is so wonderful and beautiful, and we just stay in this world, what will happen at our death? See, if we don't go to the Lord and accept Him as our Savior and start living the way He wants us to live and stay we want to live, and for most people, that's not going to happen without trials and tribulations and troubles that force us to reevaluate this life and realize that this life is not that wonderful a place. Well, why isn't it a wonderful place? Because God didn't want it to be anymore. Because if it had been, let's face it, your child wants to sleep in every day, so you bring him breakfast in bed. And you take care of him. And then you die, and what happens to that kid? That's no way to help a child. You can't help a child from being lazy by taking care of everything for them. And so when you see something good in your life, that's from God. If you see something bad in your life, it's consequence. So every good thing bestowed, there's an interesting distinction between the verbs here, or excuse me, between the terms here as to whether this is the giving or the gift. Is there a difference between my motives in giving and the gift I give you? Mm-hmm. So if all of my motives for giving are good and all of the gifts I give you are good, then what would you say? Everything is good. But I give you a gift with a sinister motive. That ever happen? People give somebody something hoping they'll be destroyed by it? Yeah, it happens a lot. What did Satan do? In the garden, he gave her a gift of a different way of looking at things. Was there a good motive there? She might have shook his hand. Well, he didn't have any hands, did he? Well, maybe he did. I don't know. What did the serpent have after? Never mind. I don't know where these things come from. All right. So he tells us that everything that is coming down from above is good and perfect, whether it's the giving or whether it's the gift. It's good. Again, Genesis 1. What does God say after everything he gave on day 1, day 2, day 3, day 6? It was good, it was good, it was good. Seven times or six times it was good, it was good, it was good. Then it was what?
Very good.
Very good. So those come down from the Father of lights. All right, we're going to have to stop there, I can see. So what we'll do is we'll talk a little bit about this Father of lights and no variation in shadow as we start our class next week. So I appreciate all your comments, and I hope that it was a valuable class for you because there's so much misinformation out there about God and what he does and what he doesn't do. All right, thank you.